Hi everyone, Susie O here. Just want to let all of you know that the certificates of deposit at Alliant Credit Union are now at, for a 6-month CD, 5%, a 12 to 17 month CD, 5.15%, and an 18 to 23 month CD, 4.90%. And for those amounts of $75,000 or more, just add on 0.5% to those rates. Go to myalliant, ALLIANT.com, and check it out.
Okay, Susie, are you ready for today's podcast?
Oh, you bet I am, because I'm unstoppable.
I put my armor on, show you how strong I am. I put my armor on, I'll show you that I am. I'm unstoppable.
April 28th, 2024. Welcome to the Women and Money podcast, as well as everyone smart enough to listen. I'm Robert, Susie and KT's producer. We decided that today we're going to revisit the main part of an episode from July of last year, all about trusts and what you need to know about them. It's an important topic to resurface. Next Sunday, Susie School will be all about real estate. And please don't forget to go to myalliant.com and take the Stay Safe quiz. Make sure you enter your email address, because next week, Susie will tell you why you need to do that. Again, the Stay Safe quiz is at myalliant, myalliant.com. And now, Susie.
Okay. Susie School. Take out your little Susie notebooks, and I'm just going to briefly tell you the difference between a revocable trust, an irrevocable trust, and a special needs trust. So let's start with the kind of trust that almost every single one of you out there, in my opinion, should have. Known as a revocable trust, also known as a living trust. A revocable trust, or a living trust, is used primarily for efficient estate planning and asset management during one's lifetime and after death. What do I mean by that? When you have assets that you own in your individual name or joint tenancy with somebody, and you are going to be passing those assets down to somebody who is a beneficiary, and their names are not on the title of your assets, the most efficient way to pass those assets down to your beneficiaries is through a living revocable trust. Got that? Just that simple. Why? Because if you don't have a trust, hopefully you have a will. When you have a will, the assets that are passed down through a will, in most cases, have to go through probate, which is a very lengthy and costly court procedure. In certain states, it could take 6 months, 1 year, or 2 years to be able to complete the procedure. And it's just a total waste of time and money. Now, a lot of you have been told you don't need a living revocable trust, and I'm combining a revocable trust and a living trust so that all of you can relate to this. You don't need that if you own a house that you own in joint tenancy, because if you die, it will pass immediately to the person that you own it in joint tenancy with. Yeah, well, what happens if you're both killed in a car crash? Now, what happens to that house? Now, that house is governed by a will. If you don't have a will, then that house is governed by what's called intestate succession, where the state that you live has already decided who is going to get your assets upon your death. It usually passes either to your parents, your children, your spouse, whatever it may be. There is a succession passage every single state has if you don't have at least a will where you've dictated how your assets or who your assets should pass to. Oh, you own a house in joint tenancy with right of survivorship, so you think you don't need a trust. And now one of you is in an accident or has a stroke, and now they're incapacitated. They don't know you. They don't recognize anybody. They're totally incapacitated. You need to sell the house, maybe because that person was contributing to the mortgage, or it's a two-story house and you need a one-story house, but now you need to sell the house. Can you? You cannot, because the person that's incapacitated cannot sign the deed to sell it. And since you own it in joint tenancy, it takes both signatures to sell that house. So what are you going to do now? Now you have to go down to probate court. That will cost you a lot of money. Have your spouse or whoever you own that house with in joint tenancy declared incompetent so you can sign for him or her and vice versa. Got that? You could avoid all of that if you simply put your assets, like your home, like your stock portfolio, like your bank accounts, all of those things in a trust. Now, obviously, you can make your bank accounts pay on death accounts, transfer on death accounts. You can set up everything like that, but that doesn't take care of the problem of incapacity. Do you understand that, everybody? The thing with a revocable trust is that it has flexibility. You, if you create the revocable trust, you are known as the trustor. And you have the ability to modify that trust, amend that trust, revoke the trust, do anything you want during your lifetime. It does not change your tax status. You don't have to create another tax form for it. Nothing. Everything stays the same. All that changes is that everything now is in this suitcase. You put it in this suitcase. And in this suitcase that's known as a trust holds all of your assets that have a title to it. Just that simple, everybody. You do not put an IRA or a retirement account or any of those things in a trust. It's mainly your bank accounts, your stock accounts, your buildings you own, your home, whatever it may be, that goes in trust. Also, if you have a minor child, a minor cannot directly inherit money. They're a minor. Therefore, within a revocable trust, you can name a trustee to take care of the money for your minor child and leave instructions as to how you want that person to invest the money or when that minor child is to get that money, at what age. You can control all of that. So again, the components of a revocable trust is a trustor, the person who has created the trust, the trustee, the person who makes all the decisions, what's in the trust, and usually the trustor and the trustee are the same people. The successor trustee, who takes over if your trustee becomes incapacitated or something happens to them. And then your beneficiaries, and it's just that easy. So that's what a revocable living trust is mainly all about. In my opinion, the less money you have, the more you need a living revocable trust. Next, an irrevocable trust. An irrevocable trust is exactly what that name says. It is irrevocable. You cannot change it once you create it, period. And an irrevocable trust is created to accomplish specific estate planning goals such as asset protection, estate tax reduction, or Medicaid planning. How does it do that? Once the assets are transferred into an irrevocable trust, you as the trustor, also known as the grantor, you, the one who put them into this trust, you are going to relinquish total control and ownership totally over those assets. So once you put money into that trust, it's now out of your estate. You may think you own it, but it is no longer yours. It's in that trust. You cannot change it. And it's held usually until you die for the benefit of whoever you named on that. Now, if you want to make changes to that trust, to an irrevocable trust, it will generally require the consent of the beneficiaries of that trust, and you have to have court approval, one or the other or both. Another reason that people love an irrevocable trust, or they think they do anyway, is that an irrevocable trust can shield your assets from creditors, lawsuits, or other claims. So unlike a revocable trust that does not provide any asset protection whatsoever, an irrevocable trust does provide a level of asset protection. How does it help you with taxes? Irrevocable trusts are used to reduce estate taxes, not income taxes necessarily, but estate taxes, because once you remove those assets from your taxable estate and you've given up control of those assets and anything about them, as they grow, they're not in your estate. So if they grow to be very large and then pass to the beneficiaries, they're not in your estate, so they're not counted for estate tax when you die. For Medicaid planning, now listen, if you anticipate the need for long-term care or nursing home expenses, it is true that an irrevocable trust can help protect your assets and qualify you for Medicaid benefits. Now, how does it do that? When you transfer your assets into an irrevocable trust, you create a separation, so to speak, between you and your personal assets, and therefore your eligibility for Medicaid, allowing you to preserve assets for your beneficiaries while still qualifying for Medicaid, which is governmental assistance. Now, obviously, there's five-year look-back periods and things like that, but you know how I feel about this. I've said to you before, I personally believe that when you have money and you get older, that money is to take care of you. And I understand that some of you say, but Susie, what happens if I have a special need child or something like that? Maybe you get insurance. Maybe that is when whole life or universal life insurance comes to play. But while you are alive, I think it's really important that you look into the difference between care in a nursing home when you are a private pay patient versus care in a nursing home when you are on Medicaid. Also, to be on Medicaid, you have to be in a Medicare-approved nursing home. And as time goes on, with Medicare possibly going bankrupt, just like Social Security, although I don't think that will happen, and the majority of the people in many ways are in nursing homes on Medicaid, paying the most amount of money, all right? You never know when they'll cut that back. So just be careful here. Now, in an irrevocable trust, you can also set specific terms and conditions for how your assets should be distributed to your beneficiaries. And again, this can be really useful for you if you have concerns about the financial responsibility of maybe your kids or your beneficiaries, and you want to provide for them over an extended period of time. All right. An irrevocable trust, just like a revocable trust, avoids probate, just so you know. And so that is a good thing. However, what's really important to remember, the main differences, and think of the names of those two, is revocable versus irrevocable. And are you sure you really want to do that? Before you do this, it is crucial, because once you do this, you cannot change your mind with an irrevocable trust, that you really consult with an experienced estate planning attorney or financial advisor to really determine if an irrevocable trust aligns or is really in sync with your specific needs and goals. All right. Last but not least, a special needs trust. Now, a special needs trust is also known, just so you know, as a supplemental needs trust. And this is just simply like a legal arrangement, and it's designed to provide for the financial well-being of an individual with special needs or disabilities without jeopardizing their eligibility for government benefits. Remember, when somebody has special needs, that means they have special needs, meaning they can't necessarily take care of themselves. They need aid of some kind. And many of your children may be in that situation. And therefore, maybe they happen to be on SSI, which is governmental aid that pays them $600 or some odd dollars a month, and that they need that money. But if they have any money in their individual name, or if you leave them money outright, chances are they will be disqualified from SSI, and good luck getting back on to SSI. That is what you really need to know. So again, it's a legal arrangement to provide for their protection, their financial well-being, without jeopardizing their eligibility for government benefits. So the primary purpose, everyone, of a special needs trust is to enhance the quality of life of the beneficiary by supplementing their government assistance rather than replacing it. Did that make sense? So once you want to have your cake and eat it too for that child or that person, where they get governmental assistance and they still have access to money that maybe you are going to leave them. So truly, the key characteristics, and I guess I'd call features, of a special needs trust is that you are, again, preserving government benefits for individuals that have special needs that rely on benefits provided by the government, such as Medicaid or SSI. And by the way, SSI stands for Supplemental Security Income. And so that's what's really important. Again, these programs, Medicaid, as well as SSI, they are based on the financial need of the person. So if you have a child, a special needs child, and they are dependent on this money that's coming in from SSI, they would be disqualified if they were to receive from you a significant inheritance or even a gift directly. It would disqualify them from that assistance. So a special needs trust is structured to hold assets for the benefit of that beneficiary without affecting their eligibility for Medicaid or SSI. So you supplement their needs. That's why it's also called a supplemental needs trust. And this trust is designed to supplement but not replace government benefits. It can, however, provide funds for additional expenses that can enhance the beneficiary's quality of life and well-being. You know, so maybe they need medical treatment or they have to go see a dentist or things that aren't covered by insurance. It can also be where they use that money in the special needs trust, right? For what? For therapy, maybe for education, maybe for transportation, recreational activities. Let's see, maybe personal care, attendant, things like that. Now, here's what's really important. The trustee of the special needs trust is typically managed by a trustee, by a person who has a fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of the beneficiary. Because the trustee, and that probably will be you if it's your child, is responsible for managing the assets that are in that trust, for making distributions for the beneficiary's benefit, and to ensure that you are in compliance with all laws and regulations, everybody, that are applicable to a special needs trust. Now, there are two primary types of special needs trusts. One is a third-party special needs trust, and second, a self-settled special needs trust. A third-party special needs trust, this is the type of trust that is funded by assets that's owned by someone other than the beneficiary. So chances are that's the one that most of you will want if you have kids. So if you are a parent or a grandparent or another family member, it allows all of you to provide for the beneficiary's needs while maintaining their eligibility for governmental benefits. However, what's fascinating and very seldom talked about are self-settled special needs trusts. Now, this is a trust that's funded with assets that are owned by the individual that has special needs. It is typically used when somehow the beneficiary comes into assets through maybe a legal settlement or an inheritance or a personal injury settlement. And then Medicaid will require that any remaining trust funds are used to reimburse the state upon the beneficiary's death. So if somebody who is a special needs person has the capability, they can, or a lawyer can, let's say they got a car accident settlement, put the money into a self-funded special needs trust. They can use it while still then being on governmental aid. But upon the death of that person, that money then will go back to Medicaid to reimburse the state for any money they spent on this person upon that person's death. Again, I will reiterate, it is important to work with a seriously experienced attorney who specializes in special needs planning when you want to establish a special needs trust. that is the Suzy School for today. Keep this podcast, keep your notes, because trust me, that's funny, trust, that is what this topic is all about. But trust me, there will come a time when somebody's going to tell you, you should do an irrevocable trust. You don't need a revocable trust. Or what's the difference for a special needs trust, whatever it may be, come back and listen to this podcast. But until next Thursday, when Miss Travis will rejoin me here for SKT and Suzy Anything, there's really only one thing that I want you to say every single day. And that is, today, wherever I go, I will create a more peaceful, joyful, and loving world. And if you do that, if you believe that, as always, I promise you, you will be unstoppable.
I'm unstoppable. I'm a butcher with no breaks. I'm invincible. Yeah, I win every single game. Minds are powerful. I don't need batteries to play. I'm so confident. Yeah, I'm unstoppable today.
Neither Suzy Orman Media nor Suzy Orman is acting as a certified financial planner, advisor, a certified financial analyst, an economist, CPA, accountant, or lawyer. Neither Suzy Orman Media nor Suzy Orman make any recommendations as to any specific securities or investments. All content contained in this podcast is for informational and general purposes only and does not constitute financial accounting or legal advice. You should consult your own tax, legal, and financial advisors regarding your particular situation. Neither Suzy Orman Media nor Suzy Orman accepts any responsibility for any losses which may arise from accessing or reliance on information in this podcast. And to the fullest extent permitted by law, we exclude all liability for loss, damages, direct or indirect, arising from the use of this information. The must-have documents discussed in this podcast are legal documents created by a lawyer and distributed by Hay House.